Welcome to the Minor League Radio Podcast, your source for what to think. From politics to pro wrestling, pop culture to progressive metal, confusing rhetoric, chronic masturbation, religion, rashes in inconvenient places, and of course the gold standard in pornography criticism. Gather around now your digital player of choice and enjoy the musings of your perpetually confused host. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Gardner.
I bid you greetings, noble citizens. It is I, Jim Gardner, at the helm of the Minor League Radio Juggernaut once again for another podcast. Lots to talk about. Lots of stuff has gone by. Real life reared its ugly head and kind of prevented me from doing a podcast in a timely manner. But we are here, and we will get to all that we need to, and I will certainly not let real life get in my way in the future. I think I'm going to start off, though, with a story about what happened to me the other night. So my day job is working with the developmentally disabled, right? Well, on Friday nights, the company I work for takes their clients out to the local bowling alley. That's the setup, the environment where this story begins. I'm there with my guys, and I run into this girl that I work with occasionally. We'll call her Sarah. Now, we're chit-chatting, and Sarah mentions that she wants to go out for a drink after work, and she asks me if I'd like to roll with. Now, Sarah's like 21, 22, and hot as nuts, so I'm all hell to the yeah, I'll meet for a drink. Now, I need to explain here. I'm going to be 41 this year, and I'm a little on the gross side, so I have no, I'm not deluding myself at all that I'm going to get laid here, okay? I've resigned myself to the fact that my days of seducing 22-year-old hotties are over and done with. You know, and that implies that at some point I had days of seducing 22-year-old hotties. I didn't. This is just more of a happy to get out of the house kind of thing. You know, it's actually nice to not worry about getting laid every time you go out. You can just talk to chicks and relate to them as people, not walking vaginas. It's very liberating. You enjoy the experience for what it is. You go home, beat off, and go to bed. So we agree to meet after work at a local watering hole. I get there and the place is packed. It's karaoke night, you see. Or karaoke, or however the fuck you pronounce it. Anyway, it's a big deal in our little town. So I get a beer and wait, and Sarah shows up about 15 minutes later and we make our way to the back of the bar. Just because that's where the darts are. She's with her roommate, she introduces us, everything's cool. We get back to the dartboard, and I hear this scream. This is, you know, one of these vapid 20-year-old girl screams. And this girl jumps on Sarah in a big hug. I'm guessing they know each other. They talk for a while, and Sarah introduces her to me as an old friend from school. We'll call her Bitch Whore. Now, Bitch Whore is smoking hot. Pretty face, great ass. But I'm noting these things in the same way that I notice a flower is beautiful. You know, nice to look at, but I don't exactly want to fuck the flower. Well, maybe after enough booze. Anyway, Bitch Whore shakes my hand and seems nice enough, so it's all good. We throw a couple of games of darts and have a few beers, and Sarah decides to go for a smoke with Bitch Whore. Now, here is where Bitch Whore earned her name. I'm not even looking at them at this point. I'm checking a text that I got on my phone. As Bitch Whore walks by me, she pats me on the shoulder, and I don't mean, you know, it was more like one of these, and says, see ya, Jimbo. Really? Really? Now you're probably thinking, why the hell are your panties in a wad, Jim? Seems like a perfectly friendly gesture. Maybe you're right, but it didn't really seem that way in the moment. First, the pat on the shoulder was just a little too hard and slow to be just friendly, like I mentioned before. Felt like, almost getting Fredo getting sent on a fishing outing. Yeah, sure, Fredo, everything's fine. Go catch me some fish. Again, maybe I'm paranoid, but when did we get so familiar that you feel you can put hands on me? And another thing, I just met you a half an hour ago and we have not said two words to each other. You know what we've said? Hi. That was it. I told you my name was Jim. Not Jimmy, not James, Jim. Jimbo? That's a little familiar. And I did nothing to this girl other than make a mental note that she was hot. And I've learned to be very discreet about that. I didn't eye fuck her. I didn't take my dick out in the middle of the bar, waving it at her, saying, want some? In my head, if she were really not a bitch whore, and was feeling genuinely pleased to meet me, again, seems unlikely, because the sum total of our awareness of each other's existence was, hi, and something a little less aggressive, like, Jim, it was nice to meet you, maybe we'll see you around. And no shoulder pat. That would have been appropriate. Not the shoulder pat from hell and, see ya, Jimbo. Again, maybe I'm reading way too much into this, and it's not like this little episode is keeping me up at night, but it's a story, and I thought I'd tell it. I suppose I could have said something like, hey, Minor League Radio, guess what? Met a stuck-up bitch Friday. Now the news. This is more fun.
You're okay. This one, real fucking ugly.
The Minor League Radio Podcast.
All right, we'll take a look at the news now at the Minor League Radio Podcast. Obviously, Super Bowl 46 is in the books and a big deal. And, you know, I have to say that a world in which an average 9-7 football team is the world champion is a world in which I do not want to live. So I will now be killing myself. All right, maybe that's a little melodramatic, but I will now make the case for why I am the single most persecuted football fan on the planet. Not you, me. Since the foundation of the universe, the football gods have conspired against me, thwarting any chance of even a modicum of football happiness. You snicker. You mock my claim. Where's your evidence, you say? Well, first, the football gods made me a Minnesota Viking fan. I really shouldn't have to elaborate any more than that, but I shall. The Minnesota Vikings, the single most underachieving, soul-crushing, tantalizing football team ever. Maybe the most successful football team in NFL history that has absolutely nothing to show for their success. Throughout the Vikings' history, they have had one of the highest winning percentages in the NFL. They are also one of only six NFL teams to win at least 15 games during the regular season. Since the merger, they have made the playoffs 24 times, third most in the league. The team currently has 11 members in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Super Bowl appearances? 4. Super Bowl victories? None. All of the Vikings' Super Bowl appearances occurred while I was too young to appreciate football, which is probably for the best. I'm not sure my heart could have taken it. I do, however, remember the 1998 season when we fielded one of the greatest offenses the game has ever seen, only to be sabotaged by inept coaching and losing to an inferior Atlanta Falcons team. I also remember Brett Favre taking the helm in 2009, having one of his best, if not his best season, at age 40, and then fumbling and intercepting his way to another NFC Championship game loss. And I remember 2000, Dante Culpepper and Randy Moss lighting the NFL up and barreling through the playoffs, only to lose the NFC Championship game and the worst playoff loss in the team's history, 41-0. The team that beat them? The New York Giants. Now things are clearing up a bit, perhaps. The Vikings did not lose that game because they were an inferior team. They were almost universally favored to win. They did not lose because the Giants have an almost supernatural ability to peak at just the right time. No. The Minnesota Vikings lost that game and all other big games because the football gods hate me. Me, me, me. All about me, not you, me. My football happiness is anathema to the football gods. And this Super Bowl is further evidence of my point. You see, I am at my core a bitter and petty person, so I will not forgive the Giants for the spanking that occurred 12 years ago, nor will I forget it. Time does not heal. It will eternally fester in my soul, and I will always curse the Giants for their insolence. Suffice it to say, I was not rooting for the Giants yesterday. Not a Patriots fan either, but I hate the Giants. At least I will root for the superior team, and I will rejoice at the suffering of Giant fans everywhere. Well, you know what happened on Sunday. The Pats played one of their worst games of the year. What's with Brady, the greatest quarterback ever, throwing it to nobody? Do the Patriots receivers have Klingon cloaking devices? Maybe Brady was preoccupied with the BJ Giselle was going to give him after the game. That would distract me. I hope she cuts him off for a month. And the Giants did just enough to win. Fuck them, and fuck the football gods who continually set themselves against me and leech even the tiniest amount of joy I might have been able to glean from the 2011 football season.
Okay. Okay. Disappointed!
MinorLeagueRadio.com.
Break yourself, fool!
MinorLeagueRadio.com.
Well, what other fun things are going on in the world? The Middle East is going nuts. There's a shock. Seems Syria's ideas of basic freedoms more closely aligned with Pol Pot than the Magna Carta. This from the AP, warning that it is a, quote, losing bet to side with dictator Bashar al-Assad. The White House on Monday urged friends of the Syrian people to help out, quote, before the violence puts a political solution out of reach. I love how they just use the generic term violence instead of the more accurate term of Bashar murdering his own people. We continue, but refusing to offer a, quote, lead from behind strategy, the Obama administration insists that after nearly a year of violence, again, murder, more accurate, and a disappointing weekend that saw a UN Security Council resolution fall apart upon Russian and Chinese objections, again, there's a shock, the Russians and the Chinese always oppose the good. Anything good, the Russians and the Chinese are going to oppose it. Anyway, a military solution is not forthcoming. The story continues. On Monday, the U.S. shut down its embassy in Syria, withdrawing Ambassador Robert Ford and 17 American officials. State Department issued a warning for U.S. citizens to leave the country and announced that Poland will serve as a, quote, protecting power for the United States, providing consular services to any Americans remaining in the country. That decision followed a violent crackdown in the city of Homs over the weekend that left hundreds dead. According to the UN, since the March 2011 anti-government protests began, more than 5,400 Syrians have been killed, mostly by Assad forces. What a gem of a man he is. White House spokesman Jake Carney said the decision to leave the embassy is part of a long-term effort to draw down embassy staff in Damascus, a reflection of the weakened security situation in Syria, and the need to ensure the safety of U.S. diplomats. But while it's too dangerous for U.S. diplomats to stay in Syria, the violence is not too much for the U.S. government to intervene. I think it's very important, this is a quote now, I think it's very important to try to resolve this without recourse to outside military intervention, and I think that's possible, President Obama told NBC in an interview that aired Monday, explaining that the administration's, quote, lead-from-behind strategy used to drive out Muammar al-Qaddafi from Libya would be implemented on a, quote, case-by-case basis based on how unified the international community was and what our capabilities were. I hate to say it, but I agree with that. You know, we can't police everybody. We just can't. And there are evil men in the world, and they do evil things. We're just incapable of stopping it all. It sucks, but that's the way it is. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was more definitive on Saturday during a security conference in Munich, Germany. She said, quote, military intervention has been absolutely ruled out, and we have made that clear from the very beginning. That insistence is a problem, says Robert Satlov, executive director of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Over the weekend, the Chinese and the Russians vetoed a UN Security Council resolution to enforce an Arab League plan that would call for Assad to step down and a transitional government to be installed. Satlov said taking the military off the table merely makes the vetoes more acceptable to those nations. Quote, if there is one thing that the Russians and the Chinese detest more than third-party calls for, quote, leadership change, it is the prospect of military intervention to implement it. That is why it was a mistake to remove the threat of intervention from the Syrian equation, Satlov wrote to the organization's website. Again, you know, why is it that whenever the bad guys are fucking around, it's the Russians and the Chinese that back their play? Whether it's the Syrians killing their own or Iran calling Israel a cancer, the U.S. is like, hey, knock it off. And the Russo-Chinese alliance is all, hey, quit picking on the little guys. How are we supposed to not view China and Russia as enemies when they're always backing the little Sith Lord wannabes in the world? That's my question.
A perfect compliment for dental work or having a boil lance.
My penis, my buttocks.
The Minor League Radio Podcast.
More fun stuff from the Middle East, or as I like to call it, the world's playground. The Iranian government, through a website proxy, has laid out the legal and religious justification for the destruction of Israel and the slaughter of its people. It is about time, isn't it? The doctrine includes wiping out Israeli assets and Jewish people worldwide. Calling Israel a danger to Islam, the conservative website Aleph, with ties to Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, not to be confused with Khomeini, who took us hostage back in the 70s, said the opportunity must not be lost to remove, quote, this corrupting material. It is a jurisprudential justification to kill all the Jews and annihilate Israel, and in that the Islamic government in Iran must take the helm. Oh, good, I'm glad somebody will. The article, written by Alireza Forghani, an analyst and strategy specialist in Khamenei's camp, is now being run on most state-owned sites, including the Revolutionary Guard's Fars News Agency, showing that the regime endorses this doctrine. Because Israel is going to attack Iran's nuclear facilities, Iran is justified in launching a preemptive, cataclysmic attack against the Jewish state, the doctrine argues. On Friday, in a major speech at prayers, Khamenei announced that Iran will support any nation or group that attacks the, quote, cancerous tumor of Israel. And the article goes on like that. Oh, these guys amaze me. You know, It's interesting to note that when I was looking for stuff on Iran calling for Israel's destruction, because I'd heard it on like Fox News and a couple other places, I did a basic Google search. That's what I do for most of the stuff I research. And the first several pages of articles that came up were all either ambivalent to or outright anti-Israel. Iran and other Muslim countries stone women for showing ankle, endorse honor killings and other fun pastimes, but Israel is more often than not portrayed as a bad guy. It doesn't make any sense. But I gotta tell you, it'd be fun to be a dude in the Middle East, wouldn't it? It'd be like, honey, you're not wearing that to go buy groceries, are you? Well, because they can see your ankles. Honey, if our neighbors see your ankles, they will be running into the house and humping their pillows and masturbating. Don't make me shove a knife in your throat. Put on some socks and a longer burqa, please. Thank you. All right, so Obama's planning economic sanctions against Iran, which is fine. We can't go to war with these people. We just don't have the resources right now. And it's not really the people of Iran, it's more their government, which I'll get into in a minute. But I find it weird that Iran already believes, they're already convinced, that Israel is going to make a preemptive strike against them. And one of the reasons that I think this is a pretty funny story from earlier this week. Apparently, if you want top-level intelligence about world affairs, all you have to do is ask U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta. This story from the AP. U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta believes there is, quote, a strong possibility that Israel will strike Iran's nuclear installations this spring, it was reported earlier. In a column in the Washington Post, it claimed that Pentagon chief believes that an Israeli strike could go ahead within months. When asked about the opinion piece by reporters traveling with him to a NATO meeting in Brussels, Mr. Panetta did not deny the claim. He went on to say, I'm not going to comment on that. David Ignatius, the columnist, can write what he will with regards to what I think and what I view. I consider that to be an area that belongs to me and nobody else. Well, then quit talking about it. He said Israel indicated that they're considering a strike, and we've indicated our concerns. The Post columnist said Mr. Panetta, quote, believes there is a strong likelihood that Israel will strike Iran in April, May, or June before Iran enters what Israelis described as a, quote, zone of immunity to commence building a nuclear bomb. President Barack Obama and Panetta are said to have cautioned the Israelis that the United States opposes an attack, believing that it would derail an increasingly successful international economic sanctions program and other non-military efforts to stop Iran from crossing the threshold, he said. But the White House hasn't yet decided precisely how the United States would respond if the Israelis do attack. Mr. Panetta said Sunday in an interview with CBS that Iran, quote, needed about a year to produce enough enriched uranium for a nuclear weapon and 1 to 2 more years to, quote, put it on a deliverable vehicle. Iran insists that its nuclear project is peaceful and has threatened retaliation over the fresh sanctions, including possibly disrupting shipping through the strategic Strait of Hormuz. Israeli media reported in October of last year that the option of preemptive airstrikes on Iran was opposed by the country's intelligence services, but favored by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Ehud Barak. Israeli television said Mossad chief Tamir Pardo raised the possibility of a unilateral strike on Iran during a visit last week to Washington. So Panetta, someone who has access to the highest levels of intelligence, is more than willing to share his thoughts with anyone who asks, apparently, and he's saying that Israel could bomb Iran in the spring. Doesn't strike me as wise or helpful, but what the hell do I know? I'm just a guy spouting off in his basement. But to clarify things, you know, the Middle East is such a fun area, you know. They used to be the light of the world back in the Dark Ages when Europe was hanging witches and shit. The Islamic world was doing all the math, all the astronomy, very tolerant area. I don't know what happened. I don't know who stole their lunch money. But right now, as it stands, Israel, the good guys. The Palestinian Authority, the Syrians, the Iranians, they're the bad guys. At least their governments are. Their people are, you know, like any people. You're going to find assholes. You're going to find good people. I've worked with Muslims. I've met Muslims. They've all been fine. I really try to judge people on their behavior, not their beliefs. I just don't care. I can't care enough about what you think and what you believe. As long as you're nice to me, I'm nice to you. And I think, obviously, the majority of Muslims worldwide are fine. It's fine. But their governments, tend to be run by radicals who are willing to either kill or die to achieve power, and that is the problem.
The Minor League Radio Podcast.
All right, some domestic news. The Republican campaign rolls on. What's up with Rick Santorum running the tables on Tuesday? He won, Colorado and Minnesota and Missouri, I believe it was. So now he's the conservative alternative to Mitt Romney. Before it was Gingrich, the conservative alternative to Mitt Romney. Now apparently it's Santorum. Things are still very much up in the air, and I'm very much up in the air as to whether this is a good thing or not. I don't remember the Republicans being this schizophrenic about who they want their nominee to be. I don't really have a problem with Mitt Romney. I don't really have a problem with Rick Santorum. He's a little too socially conservative for me. I don't give a shit if the gays get married. I don't like abortion, but if you need to have one, that's between you and God. I don't care. I mean, I don't like it, but I wouldn't make it illegal. And I kind of think the Republican Party needs to move in that direction. You know, God's not scared of abortions. God's not scared of the gays. So just drop it, would you? And be fiscally conservative. So, I don't know what to think right now. I'm still, I like Gingrich. He's kind of an outside-of-the-box thinker, but he's such a putz sometimes. And Romney is what he is. I think he'd be a competent administrator. But yeah, it's hard. He doesn't really inspire passion. Yay, Mitt Romney. It's kind of like, oh, Mitt Romney. I don't think he'd screw things up too bad. But I'm just, it's just hard to get excited about him. And Santorum, hate the sweater vest. Just quit wearing them.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
Love me some movies, so I always like to take a look at what's tops at the box office for the week. Leading things off, Chronicle. I so want to see this. One of these found footage movies, apparently about guys who develop superpowers, which is awesome. I kind of like the found footage thing. It can be overdone, though, but all the reviews I've read have been that this is a great movie. I want to see it. But do you think it's here? No, of course not. It's not in my hometown. We've got a 6-screen multiplex, but we get, The Vow with It Boy and It Girl, and oh, we love each other, but there's problems. Ugh, God. Bring Chronicle here. I want to see it. Number two at the box office this week, The Woman in Black, Harry Potter, all grown up, I guess. Number three, The Gray, Liam Neeson, kicking ass, like I mentioned in my last podcast. Good stuff there. Big Miracle, number four at the box office. That's Wales or something. And number five, Underworld Awakening, Kate Beckinsale in skin-tight rubber suits. Works for me.
MinorLeagueRadio.com.
Break yourself, fool!
MinorLeagueRadio.com.
And the Minor League Radio podcast continues with goofy shit. Winter 2012 will have an extended stay on America's calendar, according to the annual Groundhog Day forecasting event in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Absolutely meaningless, but it seems to make news every year. On February 2nd, people from around the world watch this tongue-twisting small town for a sign from one groundhog that supposedly predicts when that year's spring will arrive. If it's a cloudy day outside when the groundhog emerges from its burrow, then spring will arrive early that year. However, if it's sunny outside, the groundhog will supposedly be scared by its own shadow, retreating underground for 6 more weeks of cold weather. Of course, Punxsutawney Phil's predictions is no more able to guarantee the extended forecast than your local weatherman. ABC News reports that an analysis by the National Climate Data Center found that Phil's predictions are more often wrong than right. I'm glad we spent money on that. Phil is also fond of gloomy predictions. Ever since 1887, he predicted 99 extended winters and only 16 early springs. 9 of the year's predictions were unavailable. Cares. Punxsutawney Phil has become a celebrity in his own right. Each year, the chubby rodent is watched by millions as he emerges from a burrow in the town he is named after. Phil has become so beloved by the town that he actually lives in the local library with his, quote, wife. Wife, yeah, Phyllis, that's awesome. Anyway, 6 more weeks of winter, whatever. And the goofy shit rolls on. The U.S. Air Force Academy last year installed an $80,000 rock garden / fire pit on its campus, for use by several, quote, earth-based religions like pagans, Wiccans, Druids, witches, and various Native American faiths. For the current year, only 3 of the 4,300 cadets have identified themselves in that group, but the Academy is sensitive to the issue after a 2005 lawsuit accused administrators and cadets of allowing too aggressive proselytizing on behalf of Christian religions.
For the record, the Academy currently has 11 Muslim cadets, 16 Buddhists, 10 Hindus, and 43 self-described atheists. That from the Los Angeles Times. So they spent over $25,000 per pagan for this rock garden. If I were a pagan, how about just give me the cash? I'll make my own damn rock garden. More from your government. A 2007 federal energy independence law required companies that supply motor fuel in the U.S. to blend in a certain cellulose-based ingredient starting in 2011, even though, as the Environmental Protection Agency well knows, the ingredient simply does not now exist. So, you have to put a make-believe ingredient in your gas. A New York Times reporter checked with the EPA in January and found that the companies will still have to pay the monetary penalties for non-compliance. Oh my God. And almost certainly the even stiffer penalties for 2012, since the ingredient is still 2 or 3 years from development. It, quote, belies logic, said a Petrochemicals Trade Association executive. But yeah, we're going to stick it to the oil companies because, they're the evil ones that keep our cars running and, yeah. Make-believe ingredient. Put it in there or we're going to sue you and fine you. Oh, it's a spectacular world that we live in, isn't it? Well, I think we're going to leave it there for this edition of the Minor League Radio Podcast. You can now subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And as always, you can listen at minorleagueradio.com. You can leave comments or email me that address, jim@minorleagueradio.com. As always, thank you very much for listening. I do appreciate it. And if you like the podcast, please tell a friend. And if you hate the podcast, please tell an enemy. So, thanks again for listening, and until next time, Fear Melengue.